When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's Go Otsko.
And I'm in quarantine.
At home.
Hello, and welcome to Let's Go Otsko. It's me, Otsko. You know, every time I say that, I always think I'm going to say, it's me, Mario. I know, it's so stupid. It's so stupid, but it's because they made it catchy. And it sticks with you from when you're a child. And that's why representation matters. What if that was the whole point of me bringing up that Mario thing? Look, but honestly, growing up in Japan, right, as a kid in Japan, the only Italian thing that I did hear was Mario. Seriously, it was Super Mario, the way he talked, his little accent. That was truly like the only Italian I'd met. And that's just a video game. And even after I moved to the States, I think it's because I moved to the West Side. I was in California, where not as many Italian Americans are compared to like the East Coast. But, you know, my first Italian American experience here really was watching Jersey Shore. Unless I'm allowed to count eating at Olive Garden or Buca di Beppo, I want to say, yeah, it was definitely Jersey Shore. And you're probably like, whoa, Otsko, what's up with all this Italian-American reflection going on suddenly? Is your guest on this episode Italian-American or something? Ding, ding, ding! You would be correct! What? Yeah, my guest is Matteo Lane. He happens to be Italian-American, and he's super hilarious. You might have seen him on the Netflix's The Stand-Ups, or heard his podcast that he does with Emma Willman, Inside the Closet. Now, you might be like, wait, okay, but still, why did you bring up the fact that he's Italian-American so much? And here's the thing, I did get kind of excited talking about culture with Matteo because he's one of my very few guests who happen to speak another language fluently. So we were able to talk about linguistics a lot, and it's something he truly loves, learning culture, learning language. He's right now working on learning Spanish as well. And we talked about defending our own culture. That's why I was bringing up the whole Italian-American thing, right? So here's just a little preview. I had read in an interview that Matteo gets kind of annoyed when people tout around their favorite Italian restaurants, but it's not authentically Italian. And I got thinking, do I get annoyed if someone tells me, ooh, they love this Japanese food place, restaurant, but it's not really Japanese? Do I get annoyed, you know? And so it was kind of interesting talking about that. Like, the moments, the times that I felt like I had to defend my Asianness or my culture, whether it's Japanese or Taiwanese, or feel like I have to know it all, were times where I felt insecure or like an imposter of my own culture because I wasn't in touch with it enough. Does that make sense? And it was different from Matteo. Matteo is actually a very proud Italian-American. And super does know the culture, even cooks the food. And here's the key that's maybe different between me and him, is he likes talking about it. Whereas for me, I don't know if it's like an Asian American thing. Probably because I was so embarrassed of being Asian American at first because I was picked on for being Asian American, that now, you know, I only really talk about it if asked. Does that make sense? That's some shit I have to unpack on my own. All right, I'm very excited for you to hear the rest of this episode, the interview with Matteo Lane. But first, that's right, this week was tough. We almost didn't even get this episode out because we had other deadlines at home. And again, if you know, it's just me and my husband, Ryan Harper Gray, producing these out of our home right now because of the pandemic. We are still with Forever Dog, but we are our own employees right now. So any support helps, even a nice comment on Apple Podcasts or 5 stars on there. That truly lifts our spirits and keeps us going. And if you want to help out even further, you can go to patreon.com/letsgoatsuko and join our family today. All right, without further ado, here's Mateo Lane.
I'm so excited to be here with my guest, Mateo Lane.
Oh, a studio audience. Fabulous.
Oh, that's right. How are you? Thank you so much for joining.
Thanks. I'm good. This is usually when I have my second cup of coffee. And last night I specifically went to the grocery store to get coffee, forgot the coffee, bought everything else, came home. So I still don't have coffee. So after this, I'm going to run and go get like a cappuccino or something.
You've done a whole day without caffeine at all.
I woke up early and I got coffee from this place underneath me. Mm-hmm. And but now I'm like, my body is like ready for that second cup of coffee. And I'm like, fuck, I don't have any coffee. So,
God. Well, let's get Mateo his coffee. Let's make this fast.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's, you asked me how I am. That's the state of mind I'm in right now, is like my body's saying to me, like, get your second cup of coffee. Look, I have my Golden Girls cup ready for my coffee.
Yes. It's just empty.
It is. So I'm actually like excited. My treat is I'm going to get coffee after this, and I love caffeine.
Yeah. So what do you overlook there? So what's the day been like where you're at? You're in New York.
I'm in New York.
So besides,
I just moved to a new apartment. So I'm now in the Village, and everyone's leaving New York. So it's actually a great time if your lease is up to go find new places, because I got a deal I would never get if there wasn't a pandemic.
Yeah.
And I look on McDougal Street, which is kind of like a crazy street here in New York City, like lots of restaurants and people are always out drinking and partying and hookahs and dancing. Mm. And so it's an interesting street to live on.
So that was part of the perk. Is that part of the perk that you moved there? Like, why? How did you move during a pandemic?
Yeah, I know. And the move also, well, my lease was up.
Okay.
And I just had been in my building for a long time, and I was in the Upper East Side, which is, they also had cheap apartments, but when I was looking for apartments, because they were working on the Second Avenue train. So, but it just run its course, and everyone in my neighborhood was in their early hundreds, and I was ready to just like feel young again. So, I moved near where I work and where shows are and where where life is.
Yeah.
And I used to live in this neighborhood. When I first moved to New York, my friend got me an apartment. They were illegally renting and subletting, and it was a 6-floor walk up with a bathtub in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And that bathtub's where I washed my ass and I washed my dishes. So
versatile.
I'm strictly a bottom. But it was just so funny. Like, that was like, I lived like a Polish immigrant from 1940 when I first moved to New York.
Yeah.
And now I've like come full circle. I'm from Brooklyn to the Upper East Side of it. So now I'm back in the Village, but I have a real apartment and I'm super thrilled and I love this neighborhood. So I'm actually quite happy.
Can we trust that you'll never forget where you came from?
I will. Once you're washing your dishes where you just wash your ass 5 minutes earlier, you're like, I should probably work a little harder in life.
If it's not too much info, could I ask, was it the same soap? Did you?
No, different soap.
Okay. Sometimes you gotta be.
I'm not trying to spread E. coli to myself. No, I'm. I use different soap. I got my Dawn soap for the dishes,
Dawn
and
soap.
I have, Dove soap. Which I guess those titles are very similar to Dawn and Dove. It's like, we should really stop confusing ourselves over here.
Fuse into one, Mm-hmm. Well, Dove's, not Dove. Sorry, now I'm like Dove, Dawn. Dawn soap, wash off grease from ducks.
There you go. There's a baby duck right there.
Right. If we know anything.
Being saved from Dawn.
I just imagine it wouldn't be so bad for the butt either, is what I'm saying.
I don't know if it gets so much grease out. I mean, I don't know.
You don't want to be dry. Just.
Yeah. I don't know if your ass is a great place for Dawn soap. I guess in a pinch, if you've run out of soap and you've got like company coming over, you could use Dawn soap,
and you're like,
but
Right. Like, you're like, well, the bathtub is already filled with soap water. I just did the dishes.
Lay here a little longer.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, if they're coming in 5 minutes, who knows, you know? If your lover's an early bird, I don't know.
Yeah. Coming in 5 minutes usually is the problem with the men I sleep with, but, you know, it is what it is.
Mateo, again, you'll promise me you'll never forget where you came from.
Well, then the apartment that I had after that was even worse. I moved in. Do you know Sashir Zameda?
Yeah, yeah.
So her and I moved into this apartment together with our friend Ryan Beck. And at the time, I mean, living with Sashir was fabulous. I mean, we became best friends and it was a blessing. That home with Ryan and Sashir was some of the best times of my life. Mm-hmm. But the apartment, they took a 2-bedroom and tried to make it a 3-bedroom. This is in Brooklyn. Sure, and they built a tiny little, like, attic, essentially, on top of Sashir's room. And then built, like, a Keebler Elf stairwell up to it. So the room that I was in, I couldn't stand up all the way. I was like this the whole time I was in the room.
Yeah.
No closet. So you had to get, like, a weird rack and put my clothes. I mean, it was so weird. But That was also a great experience because Sashir, I would usually wake up and then just crawl into Sashir's bed and we would sleep in. We cooked with each other. We laughed at each other. That was such a magical time. Yeah. I loved that apartment.
And look at you now, right across from Hookah, you know?
Right across from Hookah and Artichoke Pizza. It's all there.
Oh, only if you were able to actually go and do Hookah if it weren't a pandemic, right?
Oh, no, they're still doing it. This is New York. I mean, there's still... I walked yesterday with all my groceries without the coffee and everyone just like Hookah in the street and just so funny.
That's what I'm overlooking too over here in Silver Lake, if I may.
Oh, Silver Lake?
Every time I say Silver Lake, I feel like my nose is going to start bleeding. You know, but Silver Lake, where I reside, you know, I still can't believe that this is where I ended up because, like, well, when you were talking about like a bathtub as your dishwasher and where you bathed, you know, and whatever, I don't want to call it humble beginnings because that's an insult to, you know, like so many people. That's just reality of buildings and life, you know?
It's also just like when you're young and you move to a new city and you take any opportunity you can, you know, I didn't have money. I don't have rich parents. So, you know, and I like it. I look back and think how bohemian, you know, you sort of romanticize your own past. You're like, oh, I lived in this apartment and I had a bathtub in my kitchen but it was a New York experience and right. it was amazing. And I had this extra little loft space and Chicago comics I'm from Chicago. They would come stay with me. And so I always had visitors and it was like a very, just a very romantic period to think about, like young comedy doing open mics. I was drawing it during the day. I had a day job where I was illustrating it. Mm-hmm. It was fun times.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, when I first moved to the States, it was in a cramped garage with my mom and grandma. And so,
what year did you move to the States?
I came 99. I remember because, you know, so 2000, everyone was freaking out about Y2K, right?
Right.
So I was, you know, I lived in a cramped garage, you know, 3 generations, all matriarch, you know, just being like, this is tiny. Why did we leave Tokyo, you know, to come?
Right.
And we were undocumented. And so there's, you know, but we didn't have a bathtub that we... We didn't have a versatile bathtub. This isn't an oppression off, okay? I know it sounds so like funny. I'm trying to do that. No, no way. But what was I going to say? You know, that was a... I look back to that time too as kind of like not romantic but like that's where I grew up, you know. And then you know, so I have fond memories of grandma, like,
right,
you know, making do with the garage and like putting a toaster here, a microwave here. And then my uncle came and built out a little stove. Like, we had a stove, we were able to cook in this goddamn garage, you know. And That was life. But where was I going with that? Because you were talking about, God, my brain is a bit of a blur. Y2K. Y2K was coming. And I remember thinking nobody in this country had chill. You know, I was like, where did we move to? Because everyone was like, you know, the computers are going to go down. We need to have food stocked up. And then I was like, oh my God, nobody has chill. Y2K came. nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
And then the next year, it was 9/11. And I was like, oh my God, this place is crazy, you know?
Right. Yeah, Y2K, that's just so funny. I remember my dad pulled like $100 out from the bank. He's like, if anything happens, I got enough for I don't know, groceries. But, you know, my family did not freak out the way I think most Americans did at that time. Y2K, that was so funny. Margaret Cho had a great joke about Y2K. But anyways, I was planning on going to... my dream is to go to specifically Tokyo, because I still have my two friends from elementary school who moved back to Japan. They came from Japan, and then they moved back to Japan. They were twins, Hiroshi and Soli. And
what if I was like, oh my God, I love Hiroshi and Soli?
I would be like, please, oh my God, they're the best. Oh my God, they had so many Sailor Moon cards for me in fourth grade, and it was just like a dream. But I once talked to a Japanese woman, and I have no idea if this is true, but I love language. So I speak Italian, and this is in Seattle, and she told me, oh, I think that people who speak Japanese and people who speak Italian have a very easy time speaking the other language, because like the same movement or the same sort of, there's like similar pronunciations between the languages. I have no idea if that's true or not, but I don't know if you've ever heard Italian and thought, oh, that sounds kind of like,
oh, wow, no, I never thought of that. I wonder if she was, yeah, I mean, also I don't know Italian, so so when I hear it, I'm like, oh, I'm hearing
spaghetti.
I'm just like, oh, I'm hearing a language I do not know. That is what I think first when I hear Italian. I'm like, I do not know the language, and then yes, I hear some food items being said once in a while, but also it's not like I hang out with Italians. So, yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of Italians on the West Coast. That might be more of an East Coast thing, too.
For sure. Do you do, not backwards talking, but, like, do you describe the thing you're doing first, and then you say, you insert yourself in it? So, for example, like, computer is being turned on by me. You know what I mean?
Oh, is that how, I see what you're saying.
That's kind of how Japanese is. Like, you kind of insert, like... the noun later.
Right. I'm trying to think, like, if I say what I did today in Italian, like, oggi sono sbagliato. Oggi mi sono sbagliato che ho dovuto prendere un caffè. So today, of myself, woke up and I needed to take a coffee. So I guess it is structured different than English, but I don't know. I guess I never thought about it that way. If I would say, like...
Right.
I think I would say I have to turn on the computer.
Oh, okay.
If I was going to say, io devo. I don't think I would say il computer. Yeah, I would say I need to turn on the computer. I think it's maybe more like English that way.
Yeah. Well, I guess Yoda, the way Yoda speaks is actually how Japanese people, the vocab goes.
Right. Like the place, like grammatic, like grammatically how it goes.
Right. Like wise you are or whatever. Not to...
Oh, sometimes in Italian you say bello sei tu. Like if I told someone, I would say bello sei, like handsome you are.
Oh, okay.
I would say that. I mean, I could say tu sei bello, which is you are beautiful, but I would say ma bello, ma che bello sei tu. Like maybe that's Sicilian, but like kind of backwards, like Yoda-ish. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds like
bello sei tu.
Again, versatile. Again, you're just made up of versatility. Just like, you know. You're like, well, depending on the day, I'll say you're hot first, or I'll say you are hot, you know? Handsome you are.
I'm very obsessed with languages. Anytime I know someone speaks another language, I always ask the same series of questions, like, what language do you think in? What language do you dream in? You know, what language do you... Because I think, like, for me, if I go back to Italy, it takes, like, 2 weeks to start for my brain to... turn it around again, and I'll remember things that happen in English in Italian. Like, it's weird what happens with your brain and language. You'll start dreaming in Italian. Every time I talk to, you know, my friend Sophia growing up was Greek, and she only spoke Greek at home. So I was like, well, what are you thinking? And she like really had to think about it. She's like, I don't know. She's like,
oh, interesting.
A mix.
Yeah, I know. There's something, I mean, we're just so much superior, you know, than just the one language folk, you know? I mean, I don't know how else to say it, you know, because like growing up being made fun of for my English accent and stuff. And sometimes like I'm still honestly learning the language, this one that I'm speaking. But, you know, like growing up, I was always like, so, okay, yeah, I'm still figuring out this English thing. Okay. But bitch, I speak two. Like, I'm on my way to speak two. And also I speak Mandarin too, because I'm half Taiwan.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. And so like, you know, anytime people make fun of people's accents, I'm like, well, you know, it's because they're on their way to speak another language.
Right. Another language. Right. Exactly. Right. That is a great point. Mandarin is I would love to learn Japanese, but specifically, I love the sound of Cantonese, mm-hmm. but I don't know anything about Mandarin or Cantonese, so I don't know which would be more difficult to learn. But I remember trying to learn Mandarin from my friend who was Chinese in college. But those are very difficult languages to learn because it's so subtle in pronunciations. Like the one slip of a tongue could mean something completely different, which is the opposite of Italian.
Yeah, totally. And I've done that, like one slip of a tongue, and I have a new lover, you know? And, and it's like, I didn't mean it. You know, next thing I know.
I was trying to say apple. You know?
Next thing I know, we're in a fully committed relationship, you know? I was like, I thought, you say you love things, like in this culture, people just throw out, I love lemonade. I love quinoa, whatever. Right?
That is something English speakers do. The verb to love is used in more ways than other languages. I mean, we use it as an expressive way to say, like, I love coffee. And it's it sounds so dramatic to people of other, you know, learning English. Like, you what?
Yeah. Like, and then, but you freak out if I tell you I love you. You know what I mean? They're like, that's a strong word. And I'm like, well. Yeah. Bitch, you just threw out my heart because you just talked about how much you love this little warm kale salad. You know what I mean? Down the fucking street at this overpriced restaurant. I tell you I love you and you're like, oh, hold on.
That's so funny.
Let me think about that one. I'm like, bitch, I just laid my heart out. You didn't mean it. You know what I mean? So it's like, everything's so dramatic. Also, you know, so I'm in Silver Lake where everyone right now currently is on a freak out about this fancy brunch restaurant down the street called Squirrel. Squirrel with some of the vowels missing. I don't know if you've seen it when you come.
No.
It's, you know, in a part of town. This restaurant was part of beginning the gentrification process of this part of town. I guess it's considered Silver Lake where it opened, and there's always a long line, you know, the quintessential brunch story, long ass line just of sundresses, you know, everyone in sundresses. Just people, I just know that, you know, I never ate there because I don't like eating places where I feel inferior, you know?
Of course, which is, don't you find it shocking when people are constantly putting themselves in situations where it's like, look, none of us can afford to be here. Why are we here? I don't want to feel bad about myself. Why am I eating here?
Yeah, and I don't want to, you know, I'm always careful about it because, you know, Mateo, maybe you could be like, brunch is my life, bitch.
Brunch is not my life. Wait, I'm going to turn on my Mariah Carey light because it's getting a little dark. Ooh.
Wait, you've been hiding that? You've been hiding
that. It was like lighter out today, so I just want to turn my lamp on so that way I don't look so, you know, like a...
You're back.
In the dark.
You're back. Yeah.
I'm back.
I feel like is the sun setting? Because I saw the change in day.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this new apartment. Oh, God, it's so hot. Yeah. Also, I just want to say, I'm sorry. I have nothing is decorated in this new apartment. So this is just, you know.
Look,
it's a bare bones apartment right now.
It's very minimal. So. Or it looks like you got in trouble and you are...
Like I did.
Someone was like, "It's you're grounded in that. Have a little timeout in that white walled room." You know?
Yeah, this is it. I'm in a I'm in my timeout chair. Actually, that's what this is.
Mateo, go and podcast.
I'm sorry. All right, I'll be. All right.
Put on your headset and think about what you did. You know.
This is my gaming headset, by the way. I play Fortnite every night with my friend Yamanika Saunders. So I know I look like a gay pilot, but this is. This headset is acceptable in a certain community.
Oh yeah, no, I accept it. It's you look ready to battle. Like I mean, because Yeah, like, where are you going? Where are you taking off to?
I'm going to be on... Have you ever played Fortnite before? Do you know what Fortnite is?
I do, but I don't have the capacity. I don't have, like, the coordination to do that, so I don't. I stress myself out.
Well, you start off... there's, like, a map, and you start off on this bus, and you fly over, and then you launch yourself off.
Right.
So, I mean, you basically are getting ready to launch off. When you're playing, you're like, I'm ready!
For sure. But once you're on the ground, you still have that headset on, you know? It's kind of...
Yes.
I like it.
That's true.
I like it. You're like, this pilot just still is excited about going back in the air.
He's waiting in line at McDonald's with this ridiculous outfit on, but good for him.
Wait, is there food? You can get food in Fortnite? I don't know about
that. They have like, they don't, yeah, they do. It's like boxes full, you like break them up and then fruit falls out and then that gives you health.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And fish, you can eat a fish. Or, I don't know why. It's like a raw fish and it gives you your health back.
That's
called a floppy.
That's so paleo. That's so paleo. Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah, they're very health conscious in Fortnite.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So, okay, so you're not a brunch person because, you know, it's an unpopular opinion. I feel like, you know, a lot of my friends are like into the foodies, you know. And
I'm a domesticated, like this quarantine. So my, I have a very domesticated mother in the sense of like learning how my mother's Italian and Mexican. So she grew up. Everything is home cooked. Everything's homemade. So I grew up the same way as a kid, me and my brother and sister. Even if it's like she made everything fun. If we're going to make pizza dough, we make it together. You put the yeast in, you watch it rise, you know.
Yeah.
So because I'm so busy usually and I'm on the road or I'm running around, I've been feeling less domesticated in the sense of like cooking for myself or being, you know, caring about the environment I live in.
Sure.
Essentially. I don't know if I'm using domesticated in the right word, but this is, you know, please forgive me. Don't cancel me. But, you know.
No, I get it. Yeah. Very like, do it yourself. You feel the dough, you feel the ingredients and
right.
Home.
So yeah, this quarantine has helped me just be at home. And I cooked, I think I ordered three meals. I ordered out three meals during the whole quarantine because I really wanted Thai food at one point. So I was like, I can't make this at all. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I will fuck this up. So I ordered Thai food once. But
yeah,
that was one good thing. I'm homemade pasta and sauces and prepping my food and this and that. And my friend Nick is so undomesticated. My friend Nick, it looks like Mr. Burns, but sounds like Mr. Smithers. And when this all happened, he started freaking out because I was like, Nick, you need to go grocery shopping. And he's like, well, I don't need to. I said, well, what do you have for breakfast? Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee every morning. I said, well, you can't get Dunkin' Donuts because they're closing it. And he freaks out. And I'm like, Nick, I'll teach you how to make iced coffee. And he goes, what do I look like, Laura Ingalls Wilder? I'd rather be 6 foot in the ground than make my own iced coffee. So... not everyone's so domesticated.
Right. He's going on to being 108 years old, you know?
Oh, my God. Nick is... I love him, but he's just like... he's a frail, weak individual who doesn't know how to cook anything.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not a brunch person. I'd rather cook it myself. I enjoy cooking. Cooking is something I enjoy doing, which I think some people, to be fair... just don't enjoy it. That's just not something they're interested in. They don't enjoy cooking, and that's fine. I mean, that's why there's restaurants.
For sure. And but like the certain atmosphere of like you pay a lot for very little, you know, but it's the atmosphere, right? Like that part, because I'm not convinced it's because nobody knows how to cook. You know what I mean? It's because you're like, you want to be seen.
That's true.
You go to Squirrel to be seen, and that's okay. Because when you're in line, what happens? People will see you. That's the nature of standing in one place posing for an hour. You know what I mean? For ricotta toast. You know what I mean?
And for ricotta toast. That's the thing. And how much do you think that ricotta toast costs?
I know because I looked it up because I was like, what is this location that I never ate at down the street from my place? $7. Not bad. But, you know, but it's like bread.
It's bread and ricotta.
Yeah. And so this restaurant got known for their jam and bread. Okay, so the jam is $15 and then bread, I don't know, doing the math, probably 20 something bucks. You know what I mean? I grew up on jam and bread and I don't know. So the big, you know, kerfuckle, or is that a word?
kerfuffle, maybe?
Kerfuffle. Thank you. You know, here's the
but
thing.
I don't even know if that's the right, I mean,
I will just
don't
put,
look at me.
I will just put letters together and just make up an English word. And
perfect.
You know, and so that's the big debacle, kerfuffle. That's been sort of trending on Twitter is, you know, and I've just been obsessed because I've been trying to like put my emotions together about it. But the whole thing is, anyway, their jam had mold in it and people found out and, you know, and people are like, no, I'm so offended. Like this, my place, this, the place I went to be seen, the place that was fancy now has betrayed us with moldy jam.
You know? Moldy jam. It's like if Instagram was a restaurant, that's what I feel like it is. You know, they're just upset that they're not being served likes, you know, they should be.
Right. Yeah. But maybe it was like, you know, maybe it's like being on Instagram and then being betrayed, realizing, oh, it's owned by Facebook. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Something like that. But what did you think was going to happen? Of course it's owned by Facebook. You know?
Everything's owned by Facebook. I mean, it's like Facebook's the new Disney. It's just...
Yeah.
It's owned by everything.
Yeah. What did you think was going to happen to the fancy jam that, you know, needed to make a lot of profit? Of course they're going to keep it around and it was going to grow mold. And they don't give a shit about you. But people who gentrified a neighborhood and they call it a shitty corner. That's why they gentrified it. You know, it's quoted in the papers, you know? Anyway,
oh my God.
I'm talking about... So I'm... Well, okay. Well, I'm glad... I'm glad I didn't offend you with my brunch thoughts, you know.
No, please, of course. I'll hate on brunch all day.
I read in an interview you did with Ian Aber, love him, Atlanta comic, that you get kind of one of your pet peeves is when people claim they love an Italian restaurant, but it's not really Italian. Is that correct? Is that true? Who hurt you? Buca di Beppo?
Buca di Beppo is one of them. I say it with like a sarcastic.
No, you know. I'm not judging because like I'm curious to hear because I know.
Oh, no, go ahead. Please go ahead.
I know I've eaten at not real Italian places and have been like, guys. We're going to the place that does the birthday song.
Right. Happy birthday. You know, I think this is not specific to Italian culture, but I think when you think of really good food countries, right? So think Mexico, think Colombia, think Japan, think China, think Italy, where you eat foods are made in such a very specific way. And then in the move to America, it becomes something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a great example is fettuccine Alfredo and chop suey. Neither one of these dishes originates from the country they claim to be from, right? They're both American-made dishes. Now, fettuccine Alfredo, there's a whole backstory to this. It was called pasta al burro, which was made at a place called Alfredo in Rome. It wasn't this... whatever the people American thinks it is, right?
Sure.
But fettuccine Alfredo is this American dish that Americans love, and it has nothing to do with Italy. How do I describe this? Italian food is more than just sponge pasta with red sauce poured over it, right? The Italians have a connection with their food in the sense of like they're eating ravioli. The cheese is made from this milk that is from this cow, which is owned by this farm, which we know the farmer. I mean, they have such a deep connection to their food. They care about food.
Mm-hmm.
They use food as a cultural expression of love and giving, etc., blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, a bastardized version of Italian food would be the Olive Garden, obviously, where it's microwaved and it's shit. And so, but I always joke because I think there's some people out there who've just been eating Italian food and don't know what real Italian food is.
Sure.
And in the same way with me, I'm sure I go to, you know, Thai restaurants thinking, wow, I'm eating Patsyu and this is the best. And I'm sure people are like, you fucking idiot. Like, you're eating bullshit. This is bullshit. You know, so it's, that's the same for every culture, I guess. But I'm very particular about Italian food. I love Italian food.
Right. And you make it.
Yes. So yeah. I could talk about this all day and it's so embarrassing because none of my friends want to hear about it. But I always want to talk about food and my friends are like, we don't care. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm so curious. I'm so curious because you do make it at home and like you are so proud of it that, you know, not like a who hurt you, but at least in my past, right? Like anytime I've had to sort of like show my Asian-ness more or be kind of like defensive about it, it's when people questioned it. You know what I'm saying? So when people question, like, you know, do you know what you're talking about? That's when I'm just like, well, you know, Japan, you know, sushi was founded, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, why am I spewing off facts? You know, Louis?
and well, because you care and because it means you have a fundamental understanding of Japanese food in a way most Americans don't. And a lot of Americans eat sushi. I go to this trendy sushi place. I go to that trendy sushi place. And I'm sure, well, I mean, I can't speak for you, but in the same way I look at Italian food, people go to trendy Italian place. I'm like, you're eating something called carbonara and you have no idea what you're eating. This is like, you know, when people eat the real version of the food, they're always shocked by it. There's a great video online. They go to South Korea and because Italian food is very popular in South Korea and one of the most popular dishes is carbonara. Mm-hmm. And they went to an authentic Italian restaurant and served these girls. They had like paired them up. Yeah. And then they say, you know, they give them the dish and they say, okay, for example, we're going to give you carbonara. They put the carbonara in front of them and the response of these girls were, what is this? And some ate it and they were like, this is... One girl was like, this is not what I thought it was. This is not good. The other girl was like, this is a very exotic flavor. I've never had anything like this.
Yeah.
So you get to watch people's experience with the real version of that food.
Right.
Because certain countries just make the food the way they make it. Like the way we eat Mexican food is not how they eat Mexican food in Mexico.
Sure.
You know, so it's the same. It's the same thing. It's a very cool video because these girls are...
In Korea, huh? So an authentic Italian restaurant in Korea.
Yes, they had... They
like the chef is like from Italy or something?
Yes, the
or
whole... And they import all the food from Italy. So like if they're going to use tomato sauce, it has to be San Marzano. And they have a bunch of Italian pizza places all around the world, Japan and... You know, Mexico, everywhere, that's called Vera Pizza, which means real pizza. And it has to be authenticated by this group of people that say, if you want to eat real pizza from Italy, it has to follow these guidelines. And so then they send people out and then they can verify it. And yeah. And it's, for example, like if they sell ranch dressing, they're fined $1,000 because this isn't authentic to this region of Italy. So
That's serious business. Truly trying to stay like sincere to the message. Yeah.
Yes. The one thing I love about those girls is they ate the pizza and they said every single one of them agreed like I've never had a pizza so good in my entire life.
Wow.
It was so cute. They were like, this is hands down. And then afterwards, like, well, what'd you think of the food? They all were like, The pizza. The one girl was like, the tiramisu. But it was interesting to watch because America's the same way where it's like these dishes we think are Italian, like spaghetti and meatballs doesn't exist in Italy. Mm. Fettuccine Alfredo doesn't exist in Italy. Penne alla vodka doesn't exist in Italy. Like chicken parmesan doesn't, you know.
Wow, all these you just named dishes. Four of my favorite dishes.
Well, they have versions, right? So like... Chicken parmesan would be una cotoletta, which is a breaded chicken.
Yeah.
Right?
I understand and then maybe... I understood the cutlet.
Yes, very good. The cotoletta.
Yeah.
But then, like, spaghetti meatballs. They have meatballs and they have pasta.
Yeah.
Most places don't put them together. There's certain towns in southern Italy where they'll have tiny, tiny little balls of meat that you would put on top of your pasta, but these big, huge balls.
They don't.
That's not a dirty. But no, these giant meatballs, it's like this. None of that exists.
You had me at these teeny tiny balls.
I did.
You had me there. I said, shoot, Matteo, you know. The weekend's over, you know, but...
Yeah, you're right. It's Monday. Forgive me.
No, but those teeny tiny balls, like, what is it? Just not... Isn't it just, like, crumbled meat? What am I doing?
Crumbled meat? No, they literally... You do the... They take them and fry them up and then put them in your sauce. But it's just... It's a different experience. There's a great show called Pasta Grannies on YouTube where they go... This British woman goes to these... old Italian women. I mean, like they look like they can barely walk. And then they make their favorite meal or whatever. So each region makes a specific meal. And it's cute because they're old women and they're really cute and they're making homemade pasta and stuff. But it's also cool to see like the range of different foods in Italy. And the languages, like Italy speaks multiple languages. It's not just Italian.
They have,
similar to China, where China has so many dialects.
Sure.
But they classify them as dialects, but they're really languages. I mean, they're different languages people are speaking to each other that is not the same as Mandarin.
Yeah.
And Italian's the same way. Like, there's the Sicilian dialect, which is you can't not communicate with someone if you speak Sicilian and someone speaks Italian. Mm-hmm. So everyone in Italy speaks two languages, Italian and then their dialect. It's a very...
Again, just so much superior, you know, than so much more
superior.
I mean, you know, God, forgive me for being defensive with these folks walking around, cutting out holes in their masks, being like, go back to where you came from. So, yeah, you know, but how about your Mexican side? Are you like in touch with it or not really?
My Mexican heritage, I always say that I am Irish, Italian, and Mexican because, and it was so funny, one time they were like, see these Latino comics, and they named like seven of them, and I was one of them. And I'm very proud to have Mexican heritage, but my relationship with my Mexican family is unfortunately a complicated one. My grandfather, who is Mexican, my mom's dad, had five kids with my grandmother. She's Italian. And then had five kids with another woman at the same time.
Yeah.
And named all the kids the same name so he didn't confuse the kids.
That's... What? Hold on. You're telling me. You have tethered versions of you on the other side of the family? Like the movie...
Well,
my
mother does.
Oh, you're right, right, right. Your mother does. There's a tethered version in the upside down world. That's two...
Yes.
That's two different...
It's
franchises.
A parallel universe.
right. Oh my God. Yes. Okay. So
and my grandmother, look, this is a young Italian girl in the 50s and 60s who didn't know what to do. She went to the priest. The priest said, keep having more kids. So she had more kids. But finally, she left him. But when she left him, she did it in, let's say, not the most healthy way. My mother and her sisters and brother were forbid to speak to any of that family again. My grandma just wanted nothing to do with him, his family. I understand, you know, wasn't that she was wounded.
Right.
But my mother basically grew up, you know, this is my Italian family, this is my Mexican family. These people speak Italian, these people speak Spanish.
Right.
And gone. One day just completely gone.
Wow.
And when she grew up, she was around 30. She found her dad. And her and her brothers and sisters sat down with him and sort of they reconciled with him. And he was open and honest and, you know, admitted to everything. And she did find peace with him before he passed away. When he died at the funeral, she met her brothers and sisters with the exact same names.
Oh, God. What did they? Yeah. Wow. Okay.
You know, so it's an interesting part of my life that I find because so many people in my family were trying to be quiet about it because that's what my grandmother taught. Mm-hmm. I now talk about it and I start to talk to my Aunt Cindy, my Aunt Debbie, my mom, and we're not, because my Aunt Cindy, for example, you know, it's so funny because she looks so Mexican.
Mm.
I mean, she doesn't look European at all. She looks...
Got it.
Like a Mexican woman.
Yeah.
And everywhere she goes, people speak Spanish to her. And she's always, I don't speak Spanish, blah, blah, I'm so sorry. But everywhere we go. So, you know, it's in my genes. It's in my life. And I've actually found that I've somehow made a connection to my Latin heritage by learning how to speak Spanish. And I did this Mexican TV show called Noches con Platanito.
Yeah, I know it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Noches con...
My former roommate was on that show. Yeah. It's a huge show.
It's a huge show. Mm-hmm. And I did it and I did it all in Spanish, but I sound very Italian when I speak Spanish. Mm. I sound like Mario and Luigi, like, hey, about, you know. And I told him the story about my grandpa and he laughed. He said, oh, yeah. Very funny. Your grandpa sounds really smart. But, you know, it's funny because, like, my grandpa, before he died, gave my mother photo albums of all of our family in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And so I have all these pictures of all my aunts and great aunts and uncles and family in Mexico. And you can see, I can see my mother and her brothers and sisters' faces in these photos.
Wow.
And yeah. So I'm hoping that I know we're from Guanajuato. I know our last name is Maldonado. And I guess they would have come here in the 40s or, yeah, it would have been like the 40s or something. So I want to go back to Mexico one day and just have, like, gather information about my family and go find. Because we did the 23andMe and it's like your first cousin, Antonio Maldonado, you know, and it's like we're connected by the Native American roots and actually East Asian, because my Mexican family is indigenous to the land of Central America and Mexico.
I was going to say, so who had another affair, you know?
Well, they say Native American, but
right.
I guess because it's Native American, it's like 2% East Asian.
Right.
And, you know, other stuff. It's, I mean, 23andMe was very, very interesting, but so it's hard for me to say, like, I am Latinx. I feel most connected to my Italian heritage. I speak Italian. I look Italian.
I have it written here that I'm interviewing Latin comedian... Mateo Lane,
but I'm proud to say that I'm Latino. I love it. I really am. And as an adult, I'm trying to, you know, I don't want to be like I lived a Latin experience because I didn't, but I am, you know, it's complicated when you have mixed family members, like my mother and her family, it's identity starts to become
totally, you know, just got to put that other family on the ofrenda. So after you pass in the next life, you can see them and be like, you know what I mean? And meet, I don't know. This is all from Coco, the movie Coco that I...
Oh my God, Coco. I saw Coco on a plane. It was almost an empty plane. And there was a gay flight attendant. And he was very nice to me. He kept coming over and checking on me. So at one point I'm watching it. I was crying so hard. You know, planes make you cry.
Yes.
I was sobbing. Oh my God, I was sobbing. And he came up. He's like, he was British. He's like, do you want a bit of a snack or something? You look a bit upset. And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm watching Coco. You know?
Yeah, and you're like, yeah, do you have a biscuit? Anything?
Yeah. Give me a Biscoff cookie.
Yeah, just soak up these tears. No, yeah, that movie. But, you know, that's where anytime I say, I'm like, oh, yeah, the ofrenda, you know, you got to put it up or else you can't cross over. I know it from Coco. It's not like I read books and, you know.
Dia de los Muertos, you know, yeah.
Well, you know, I have friends who celebrated and stuff, but like, you know, I always felt weird about like tagging along. So I never tagged along. It's not like I never painted my face, you know, when it was time for Dia de los Muertos, because I was like, well, I'm just coming in and going to paint my face, you know, because I watched Coco once. I'm not going to do that.
But hey, that's just me. It's a beautiful thing in Mexico, that celebration, and you know, it's above anything, it's about celebrating your ancestors and people who have passed. I think that's something you find in every culture. I think the Mexican culture really embraced it in a really beautiful way.
For sure, but I mean, as an Asian person, just coming in having watched Coco,
I saw Coco.
Do I need to paint my whole, you know, Juanita painted my face, you know? I paid her $50 an hour. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, you know, there's some things that I'm like, I will appreciate it and I'll even go, but I don't need to be in the garb, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's okay.
Very true. It's not like a Star Wars movie where you want to dress up like a Jedi. It's like, oh, this is like an actual real culture. I'll be respectful and do the right thing.
Yeah. That's so funny. So you've been on like a Mexican showcase and then...
That was so fun. I want to do a show in Spanish. My friend Carmen Lynch in New York, she is she's actually of Spanish descent, but she works in all these Latino rooms and Latinx rooms, and they have all these different Spanish speaking shows. So I want to do it, but my Spanish is so heavily influenced by my Italian.
Yeah.
I wonder if the audience would just be laughing at me or with me, but I kind of want to do it.
That's a risk you kind of have to take. That's the only way you can find out.
Yeah, maybe. I'm taking Spanish lessons right now to get better. I'm about to, when COVID is over, that day ever comes, there's certain programs where you can be with, long story short, I'm going to be teaching art classes to young Spanish, you know, Latin kids.
Oh, amazing.
Who
yeah.
Maybe don't have a home.
Right.
So, but I want to be able to make sure that I'm speaking full Spanish because I don't think a 8-year-old's going to understand the difference between Italian and Spanish. So it'd be, but those languages sure. are so similar. It's hard to like
right.
break them apart.
Yeah. 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 No, that's so interesting. I used to get like booked or like asked. There had been numerous times where it was, for me, it was like queer lineups where they'd be like, lesbian Otsko, or at least bi with that haircut she got.
Or at least bi.
Those bangs, you got to be. And I'm just like, or, you know, or I've played a lot of lesbians actually too, where always upset about a breakup, very specific type of lesbian.
A lesbian upset about a breakup.
Always just upset about a breakup. Like something about this says villain, you know.
But I like your bangs.
This is leading lady.
Oh, with the
this is villain.
But it's true because villains do, if you look at drawings of villain characters, they're always a little like they have these like asymmetrical haircuts or some sort right. of like symmetry or like the right. sharpness or like, you know, yeah. like Maleficent has, you know, this is my favorite villain. This is my favorite.
Yes. The cheekbones, you know, for days.
The
yeah.
cheekbones and the, you know, the sharpness and stuff, because that's what I, as a young gay kid, I was always attracted to the villains because they were this other, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't like Aladdin and Jasmine. It's like, oh, so boring. Like he loves her. She's a princess, but Jafar, now we're talking. He's got secrets and powers and he's hidden and he's getting, you know, he talks to a parrot and he's got lightning. And
yeah.
I mean, I was always so attracted to the villain because they just didn't fit in this category of like male is like this and woman is like that.
I am realizing you know, they do draw a lot of villains, which
oh, I'm obsessed.
Is Maleficent your favorite?
Maleficent is the like single most important figure in my life besides Maria Callas, but she
the singer.
Yes, Maria Callas, the Greek singer. Opera singer, died young, tragic, mm-hmm. dramatic. You know, the weight loss, the affairs, the singing, the losing. I mean, she was amazing. She looked like a Disney villain, Maria Callas. She looked like Maleficent with a beehive. I mean, she was beautiful.
Yeah.
But yeah, as a young gay kid, oh my God. I think something about Maleficent just spoke. Maleficent and Storm from the X-Men just like... Mm. spoke so much to me because they were these like powerful women and I just was obsessed. And I was drawing an X-Men comic book yesterday. I was drawing Jubilee and Storm. Mm-hmm. Those are my two favorite X-Men. And I'm still such a nerd about all that kind of stuff.
No, yeah, I was a little basic bitch. I always wanted to be the protagonist. And I was like, these basic bitches would have never talked to me. And here I am trying to, you know, replay scenes as a little kid, just being like, oh no, my slipper, right? Oh, well, someone's gotta come find me, you know, put the slipper on my shoe. What a boring storyline, by the way, yeah. right? That's the plot, you know? Some basic boy is like, oh, I danced with a girl one time. Also,
right.
never understood, but you know, at the time I was like, ooh, that life though, you know, where you were just cleaning dirty little places. Dirty places. Wherever Cinderella was cleaning, all over the house.
Chateau in France with her stepmother.
Yeah, just cleaning and then having to get on her knees and stuff. And to suddenly, which I never understood why these princesses that have been locked up forever, right? Suddenly know how to ballroom dance when they all.
I know.
When the spotlight's on them, she's like, oh, I know this. What?
And singing.
Right. Who taught you? You know,
who?
I guess, yeah.
Right?
Where did you?
I know.
But, you know, but I was so impressed by that I was always like, I want to be the princess.
Never thought about being Maleficent in a tower with goons and shooting lightning and making storms and.
And you know what?
Turning into dragons.
Yes, but turns out she has a lot to be pissed about.
She does have a lot to be pissed about. She wasn't invited to a party because obviously they were judging her for the way she looked. So guess what? She's going to kill their daughter.
Yeah.
It's like... I mean, the most dramatic woman on the face of the planet. Oh, I wasn't invited to a party? I mean, there's so many other things she could have done. And she, in front of everyone, was like, well, your daughter's going to die. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you know. Totally. And she herself turns into a dragon too, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, in the cartoon. She swears. She's the only Disney villain to swear. She goes, now will you deal with me, old prince, and all the powers of hell? And then she explodes into a huge dragon. Oh, it's that scene at the end. Sword. It's like 5 minutes long.
Right.
It's Maleficent versus Prince Philip. And it still makes my heart race. It is the greatest. It's Tchaikovsky music. Mm-hmm. It's Mark Davis who designed it. Ivan Earl, the art director, the collab. Oh, just her shooting lightning and the thorns and the dragon. I mean, I get chills thinking about it now because it was so important to my life.
You know what? I'm going to rewatch just the fight scene, actually. I mean, I'm going to be bummed now that I have a different perspective on Maleficent when she dies, but I won't. And
so I always pause it right before she dies.
That's what I do with everything that I know. Like if it's like Titanic or like Waco, like I won't watch the last episode of Waco because I'm like, yeah, I know. What happens?
Titanic is such a shit movie. It's a Lifetime movie with a budget. I mean, that movie was such crap. Rose is such a horrific character.
So long. Yeah.
She's so selfish and so... I mean, it's like...
So
literally
rich.
The like, let's think about the perspective of her fiancé-to-be. This guy's like, I gotta deal with this girl who wants expensive artwork, expensive clothing, expensive this... and take her mother along and pay for her mother, then go on this ship, and she for 3 days on a ship she can't hold it in, and now she's going with some guy she just met, literally has no idea who it is, and she's gonna leave me for this guy. I'd be pissed off too.
So pissed. And then now a whole ship's sinking, and it's like, oh, this might be like my last day on Earth, and you're running off with my fiance, you know?
Right. Of course. I'd be so pissed off. At least she could have been like,
because he could draw. Because he could draw with, what was that, pencil?
Pencil. He drew French women. French prostitutes, I think is what he said.
Right. And it's like, great. Amazing. What else do you do? I don't know. He like runs around. He runs fast.
He lived in Wisconsin and was in cold waters once. That was enough for her to be like, I'm leaving my husband. Meanwhile, how much rights did women have in 1911? And she's like on this ship with all these paintings and all that, and you know, her mother's, everything's paid for.
Yeah.
I guess it's supposed to be a love story, but I really just look at it as like a bratty girl who didn't get what she wanted.
We were given so many basic ass stories, basic ass protagonists that we had to care about all these years. All these years.
And then and then when she's older, you know, like, I'm my star. Instead of giving that diamond to her grandkids, saying, all of you can go to college for the rest of your life, what does she do? Drops it in the ocean. Yeah. Bitch.
Do you know how many people are fucking starving?
Right. Sell that shit.
Yeah.
Give it to charity.
Start an orphanage. Like.
Start an orphanage. Start an orphanage, and then we can have Annie again.
Yes. Another one, please. And then they did. They were like, this time... Black Annie, and we were like, yeah, we did it.
Well, the problem with that movie was that Cameron Diaz was playing Miss Hannigan, and it's like, she's so not Miss Hannigan. Like, Miss Hannigan isn't this, like, sexy, foxy, you know, like, a little, like, clumsy woman. And it's like, if Carol Burnett's the standard of Miss Hannigan, like... Kathy Bates played Miss Hannigan in like the 1999, 2000 adaptation of that movie for like Disney. Where it's like, we gotta get, like, I like Cameron Diaz. I think she's very talented. I'm not taking it away from her, but she's not Miss Hannigan.
Yeah, it's gotta be, just like this cut from the same stone, at least, you know.
Right, or just bring Carol Burnett back.
That's true.
Or bring Kathy Bates back. Like, how awesome would Annie would have been if it was like Jamie Foxx and Carol Burnett? Like, yeah, I'm lining up.
Yeah, not Charlie's Angel, you know. Just
right. You can't go from the main Charlie's Angel girl to Miss Hannigan.
No, I used to wear leather. No, just a leather jumpsuit, tight, you know what I mean? Yeah, no. You're right. You know so much shit. Again, superior. Hey, Mateo, I have a quick question from a listener for you.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Oh, gosh. There's two I can choose from. Let's do these two really quick, okay? This is technically two questions in one. This is from Ricardo in Louisville, Texas. Well, this is one question in one. Ryan Reynolds or Hugh Jackman? Don't know why.
I guess I would pick, I'm not really neither one is my type, I guess you would say. Ryan Reynolds, he seems like maybe he's a little less... Hugh Jackman just seems so, like, I'm an actor, theater, and I just would be a lot to handle. So I think I'd go with Ryan Reynolds. Maybe we could... Ryan Reynolds and I could cook brunch together. Be a little, I feel it'd be a little more chill.
Right, right. Then Hugh just being like, you know, I have a story from when I was starting out in acting, and here's a monologue or something. Yeah, I could see
something.
That too.
Yeah, and they both seem fine. I'd love the opportunity to even meet either one of them, but I would pick Ryan probably.
Great. Okay, Ricardo, Ryan. Ryan wins. This is from Coco. How did you learn to draw, and what is your workout routine? That's the two questions in one.
I'm like, oh, interesting. Well, I learned to draw. So my mother is an artist. I think it's genetic. My mother is an amazing artist, but you know, she just had kids. That was her life, and she didn't. I don't think had the same ambition as me. But my brother, sister, and I are all artists. I've been drawing for as long as I can remember, and kind of like in an obsessive way too. Like I would sit with like a ream of paper and go through it in a week and draw. And if I made one mistake, I'd flip to the next page. I would had my life. My childhood was filled with posts. I would love to go to Staples and get Post-its, because the Post-its I could make flip books.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I would make animations, and my cousins had a camcorder, and we would set that up, and I would do all these animations of Maleficent or Storm. And then you would put a paper up and click it real quick and put the next paper up, and we would make animation. We'd make claymation. Like, art has just always been a part of my life. I never studied art until I got to college. I studied opera when I got to high school, but I was still drawing on my own. Then I got to college. I went to like the most prestigious art school in the country, the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and I got in with 5 drawings. But it changed my life. And then I finally had the best art teachers in arguably the world.
Right.
Nurturing my talent, guiding me and helping me work even harder and really move to the next level. And I was living in Italy and painting in Italy. And my whole life was art. I was obsessed. I would paint, you know, we had 7-hour painting classes, and I would go home and I would paint till 4 a.m. and wake up. I was just obsessed.
Yeah.
And then I got a job drawing TV commercials and fashion ads for a living. And that got me to New York. And then I started doing stand up and say goodbye to the art world. But now I draw for myself, and I do things like my friend Bob the Drag Queen and I have a comic book that we made that we, you know, have big things happening with it. I can't say.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like I'm now able to draw for myself. I'm now able to draw for things that give me happiness, because when you draw for other people, as much of a blessing as it was you start to hate what you – this – beautiful talent. You know, I used to be so inspired, and I used to be so like I would see something and have to draw it. It was this cathartic, instinctual feeling, and that all started to go away because it just became so.
Right.
It was just work, right? So it took me once I left my drawing job and I was doing stand up full time. I would say it took me a full 2 years to come back and really love drawing again.
Oh, interesting.
And now I bought the iPad Pro, so I put all these pictures up on Instagram of like Disney villains and it, but I'm drawing because I'm just drawing what makes me happy. I'm gonna be on a plane for 5 hours. I'm gonna draw Hades. I'm gonna draw Predator. I'm gonna draw Maleficent. Like,
yeah,
I don't need to prove anything anymore. Like, I don't need to prove that I just am drawing for the enjoyment of drawing. So it's taken me a while to get back to that point.
Right.
But that's my sort of history with drawing and illustration.
It's so interesting. Once like you've started to make a career out of it, then it was like, well, I'm getting notes from people, and then it's someone else's vision, and then you're trying to like fit that vision. So,
and in a way, it becomes so easy is the wrong word. Drawing is not easy. Drawing is not really enjoyable. Painting's not enjoyable. People, I paint is therapeutic. Mm-hmm. No, it's like doing math. You're problem solving. It's difficult. Your body is tense, and your mind is tense. I mean, it's not an easy thing. You have to exert a lot of energy when you are creating art, at least my experience. I never found it to be this like, I'm painting and it's relaxing. And no, it's like, it's a constant observation. It's a constant correction. It's a constant like skill, you know, muscle, everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the end results of what I do. And I like the feeling of getting what I see in my head out on paper.
Right.
But I lost that for a while. So
you said you mentioned muscle when you were talking about concentrating hard on painting and a drawing, and it's you know, it's actually problem solving, which brought which brings me to, what's your workout plan? What's your workout regimen?
Well,
is it from tensing up while you draw Hades?
It is, and I'm having like back problems now because I've been drawing this comic book of Jubilee and Storm the past week, so like my back.
Yeah,
really hurts.
I thought you were just doing that to flex, so I laughed because your ginormous bicep, when you were like, I'm having back problems, I was like, oh, Mateo.
I'm having some back issues. It's like the beginning of like gay porn. But my sister is a IFBB pro, which is an international fitness bodybuilder. Her whole life is fitness and training, and that's her whole, you know, career. And maybe like 4 years ago, I just really wanted to learn how to work out and feel better about how I look and, you know, the usual thing. I've always been super, super, super thin and just wanted to build up. And so my sister gave me a diet and gave me an exercise routine and became my nutritionist and personal trainer and just taught me, hey, if you want to work out, this is how you should do it, and this is how much you should work out, and this is how much you should lift, and this is how much you this is when you should eat, how you should eat, what you should eat.
You can do that with Italian food?
Well, I mean, I do eat pasta still, but you know, the thing is, the diet that I'm on isn't about taking away food. It's just knowing what I'm eating, how I'm eating, and when I'm eating. I think a lot of times when people are trying to lose weight or they're trying to better themselves, there's a lot of confusion about food. And one of the things I learned was, you know, keep your body on a regular schedule. Eat the same time every single day. It helps your body process food and gets your metabolism better. And
got it.
But yeah, and then I enjoy it now. I enjoy going to the gym. I mean, obviously I can't now. The gym's closed in New York, so I'm working out at home.
But with that headset now, like earlier you look like a pilot, but now you're looking like my Equinox fitness instructor. And
hi everyone, thanks so much. So ladies, you know,
I know. No, it's good. It's actually a headset that kind of fits many scenarios.
It is actually, you're right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I enjoy working out now. When I go on the road, it's something that I do my schedule usually is so hectic. New city every week, going here, going there, going there. You know, it's the one thing that I'm like, well, I know when I walk into a gym, I know what to do. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of calming in a weird way. And then I like the results. I like how I look. I feel better about how I...
Yeah. So does, you know, so does Coco.
And thank you, Coco.
Frankly, me too. Yeah. And so
thank you.
Wow. Mateo, we have come to the end of the podcast. We didn't even get to the game. We were chatting and I was having a great time.
So much fun chatting though. What fun.
Yeah. And so, you know, we'll end it here. But I mean, God, I learned so much, you know, from washing your butthole in the not butthole. It wasn't just, you didn't say butthole. Like, I picture the butthole.
But my ass in the sink or the tub.
In the same bathtub that you washed dishes into, now being an ultra mega Latinx comedian superstar. And so.
I mean, no big deal. No big deal.
And you live across hookah. Like, you are truly an inspiration. Well, that's it. Thank you all so much. That was Mateo Lay. Till next time. Goodbye.